And I've not done my job to write into that yet. And I've got all my scriptures written down, most of them anyway. I went through them the other day as far as my favorites. I think we all have quite a few favorites. But one of mine, see if you can remember what it is. Proverbs 29, verse 18. Does anybody remember that? It is so important, too. That's why it's my favorite, or one of my favorites. Without vision, the people perish. But happy is he, don't forget the rest of it, because it fits in together, and that's where I wanted to start out, because it's going to end this way, too. Without this vision, we would just pretty much be roaming, wouldn't we? Be not knowing what's going on, what to do. Let me ask, following that up, and we'll get into this a little bit more, but has anyone heard of a king lately? Have you seen one on TV, in person? Are you aware of any kings? Any kings or queens? What are their names? You know, if you do, it's so interesting to have Google nowadays, because you can type in a word and up it comes. Did you know that there is a King Carl Gustav and Queen Sylvia? Do you know where they're from? Gustav, Sweden. King Carl Gustav. There's also emperors, so I thought I'd throw an emperor in there. You might know where this one's from. Emperor Akihito of Japan. There's also another King Philippe. King Philippe of Belgium. King Philippe. King Abdullah II of Jordan. And, of course, Queen Noor of Jordan. She is not the Queen of Jordan anymore. So there's a word after that. I can't remember what that word is. Kind of like an acting queen. She still retains that title. But she was no longer queen after King Hussein died. There is still today a King Juan Carlos. That was a giveaway. Spain. But it's interesting when you look at the monarchy. And, of course, a very well-known queen in this day and age is Queen Elizabeth II. So it's interesting to see the rulership that we have in today's day and age, because not many of these you don't hear of very often in the news. You do hear quite a bit sometimes about Queen Elizabeth and the apparent heirs of the throne in England. But you wonder sometimes just how do they rule? And looking at this and tied in with Proverbs 29, verse 19, you know, someday you may be a king. It's interesting to have a vision of really looking at that, though, isn't it? Because aren't we just menial people? I was watching a movie a couple weeks ago, just a portion of it, to where it was more like a Cinderella-type story, to where the poor girl meets the king. And right toward the end of the movie, before all the good stuff started happening, the king looks at her and he says, "You're just a servant." And I thought about that. Did you ever think about that? You're just a servant. What does that tie into your thinking? Do you remember what Jesus Christ said? The creator of the entire universe, he was just a servant too. So it's interesting to show the perspective of what's happened to the idea of leadership in the world of which we live today and since the very creation of mankind. It hasn't been a really good story, but each and every one of us are being called to greatness. Does that ring a little bell? Call to greatness? That, by the way, is our camp theme this year. Our 2013 camp theme. So all of our young ones are going to be very familiar with that phrase, a call to greatness. But that is where we're being called to. Let's look over at Revelation chapter 1. We've seen these scriptures many times, as we are with so many, but just another review to help again to recapture that vision of what our destiny is. Revelation chapter 1. And we'll begin in verse 4, a very interesting scripture here. I don't want to read over too fast, because here it says, "John, to the seven churches which are in Asia, grace to you and peace from him who is and who was and who is to come." That's referring to, by the way, the Father. Because the greeting continues here. And from the seven spirits who are before his throne. And from Jesus Christ, the faithful witness, the firstborn from the dead, and the ruler over the kings of the earth. I guess that pushes Satan out, doesn't it? Some think that he's got rulership over the kings of the earth. That was never relinquished. Even Nebuchadnezzar knew that, didn't he? To him who loved us, washed us from our sins in his own blood, and has made us to be kings and priests to his God and Father, to him be glory and dominion forever and ever. These couple of verses here show a lot of incredible things, don't they? About what we know that not many people know about. But what do you think of today when it comes to rulership or leadership? It seems like the world has been and is being poisoned with the idea of rulership, doesn't it? Anywhere from corporate rulership to those really bad CEOs who are just money thirsty, to leaders over churches, to leaders over kingdoms, to leaders over families. It's been poisoned. We have seen some very bad leaders even in our time. Once again, Googling bad people, I came up with the 10 top 10 modern despots. This is from March 23rd, 2009 by chiefexecutive.net. And I'll go back because you'll think maybe 10 is pretty bad. You'd hate to carry on these names. But thankfully, we're all going to get new names also. This man was the president of Equatorial Guinea from 1969 to 1979. Under his rulership for 10 years, Francisco Nguema, 50,000 to 80,000 perished under this man's rulership. And this is non-combat. Number 9 belongs to Slobodan Milosevic. And you probably all remember this man. Ruled Serbia as president from 89 to 97, 230,000 perished under this man's rule. And most, again, remember a man named Idi Amin. He's number 8. So you can see this is getting worse. President of Uganda from 71 to 79, 300,000. The seventh belongs to Kim Sung, president of the Democratic People's Republic of North Korea, from 72 to 94, 600,000 to 1 million perished under this man's rule. Of course, many again remember Pol Pot, prime minister of Democratic Cambodia, from 75 to 79, 4 years of his rule, 1.5 million died under this man's rule. Number 5, Mengistu Haile Mariam, a president of Ethiopia from 87 to 91, again only 4 years, 1.2 to 2 million died under his rule. 4 belongs to Vladimir Lenin, chairman of the Council of People's Commissars in the Soviet Union, 1917 to 1924, 7 years, 9 million. Joseph Stalin takes number 3. USSR has not had too many good leaders. Chairman of the Council of Ministers of the USSR, Soviet Union, from 1946 to 1953. Under his leadership in 7 years, 20 million died. And, of course, most remember, number 2 comes in at Adolf Hitler, Chancellor of Germany. 1934 to 1945, 25 million perished under his rule. And top 1, Mao Zedong, chairman of the Communist Party of China. Chairmen are getting a really good name. 1945 to 1976, 44.5 to 72 million, it's not known exactly, perished under this man's rulership. And that's in modern day times. You've heard of Ivan the Terrible. There are many people have died under rulership. You can see how bad good leadership is needed. And if we don't carry on this vision of what God is doing, we won't be there. Because we've got to understand and to get it. Today you can find still kings and queens and presidents and chairmen and prime ministers and emirs. Can you think of any good leaders in the modern day times? Someone pick a leader? You might be able to pick a few out. Any volunteers out there for a decent leader? I had that on my list. I figured somebody would say President Reagan. We looked at him as a fairly good leader. I mean, especially comparatively, what we've gone through. Anyone else on my list here? Queen Elizabeth? She's known as someone who's led, although not an official ruler from that point. They're ruled by Parliament, but overall a good queen. Margaret Thatcher. Some look, the Iron Lady. Winston Churchill, some would look at him. Golda Meir. How about in our very own country? Abraham Lincoln? Teddy Roosevelt? Some look at them as pretty decent leaders. You know, I know God looks at it from a total different way, but overall, when you see someone that did really not have the Spirit of God, that overall maybe they did acknowledge that there was a God. I know President Reagan often did that. But why does it seem like there are not or have not been many good leaders? I think we can look at a couple of scriptures for that. You'll probably remember one that Paul spoke of in Romans chapter 8, verse 7. Let's go over here. It's one of those that, again, it's referred to quite often, but it really gives the reason why there really is not very good leadership. Now, I'll go to another one, which you'll go, oh, bingo, that one too, and many, quite a few others. But this one here is why we understand that you cannot of yourself change or convert somebody. It takes a miracle. It takes an absolute miracle. Here Paul said, the carnal mind is enmity against God, for it's not subject to the law of God, nor indeed can it be. It's not possible. So whatever you would think with this scripture, whatever good that someone can do in the world, apart from that, is pretty miraculous too, isn't it? The carnal mind is enmity against God. It's hostile to God. And then you get Jeremiah 10, verse 23. Let's go back and take a look at this one. We're seeing some core reasons why we don't have or have not had good leadership. Jeremiah chapter 10, verse 23. It's very simple. O Lord, I know that the way of man is not in himself. It is not in man who walks to direct his own steps. And as potential leaders in the coming kingdom, we're going to have this so ingrained because we're learning this process as we live now. We're learning to live by every word of God and reject the other things. Do you know, I looked at Forbes' top 10 qualities of a good leader. Very interesting. When you're looking at this from a Christian perspective, Forbes' top 10 qualities of a good leader, I like the first one. The first one is honesty. We're certainly lacking in leadership then, aren't we? When you even take a look at that one. But then they have the ability to delegate is two. Three is communication. Four is a sense of humor. Five is confidence. Six is commitment. Seven is a positive attitude. Eight is creativity. Nine is intuition. And 10 is the ability to inspire. I can give you those if you would like those qualities, but I think you'll find that they're not as important as the qualities that are defined. This was the top 10 qualities of a good leader. I'd like to give you 9 qualities of a great leader, of a godly leader. And you all know these, don't you? You can find them in one book and one chapter. Here they are. Love, joy, peace, long-suffering, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, meekness, self-control, against there is no such law. It's right there. Things sometimes that we take for granted, but all qualities of a great or godly leader. It sums it all up. The fruits of the Spirit. So when you look at these qualities, and you get to the point where all the way back in the past when Israel was led by a godly leader. In fact, it was God himself, wasn't it? And yet, it came to a point where Israel rejected him, and he said, you know, something's going to happen here. Did God know this, what would happen to kings? Let's go back to 1 Samuel chapter 8. I think when you see this, you'll go, God knows everything, but he specifically knew and forecasted what was going to happen when they asked for a physical leader, even from among themselves. 1 Samuel chapter 8, verse 11, he said, this will be the behavior of the king who will reign over you. Now look at these words. He's going to take your sons and appoint them for his own chariots and to be his own horsemen, and some will run before his chariots. He will appoint captains over his thousands and captains over his fifties, will set some to plow his ground and reap his harvest, and some to make his weapons of war and equipment for his chariots. Verse 13, he will take your daughters to be perfumers, cooks, and bakers. Verse 14, he will take the best of your fields, your vineyards, and your olive groves, and give them to his servants. He will take a tenth of your grain and your vintage and give it to his officers and servants. He will take your men servants and your maid servants and your finest young men and your donkeys and put them to his work. He will take a tenth of your sheep, and you will be his servants. And you will cry out in that day because of your king, whom you have chosen for yourselves, and the Lord will not hear you in that day. He warned them of what was going to happen. And do you notice, because I emphasized something that the king was going to do, did you notice that one word that I emphasized? Take. Totally opposite of God. Totally anti-rulership. Because it's not taking. A good ruler, a godly ruler, is going to give. Not to take. So I'd like to talk to you today about being a king. Because if that's what our destiny is, then we've got to get our thought process going there now. So I'll ask you a simple question here today. It's very simple. I don't think any of you would fail this one. Who was the first king of Israel? We know to be Saul. Let's go see what happened when Saul was picked. You're still in 1 Samuel. In chapter 9 here, beginning in verse 1 and 2, we read of a couple things. So, you know, God didn't set his hands back and say, I'm off of it. He also, just as he does today in appointing leaders, he did it with Israel. He goes, you want a king? Here's the one I'm going to set for you. There was a man of Benjamin whose name was Kish, the son of Abiel, the son of Zur, the son of Bechorath, the son of Aphia, a Benjamite, a mighty man of power. See, ask yourself sometimes, why did God choose something like this? You know, don't forget, he knows mankind's mindset. And they were going to want a ruler that looked like a ruler. He had a son whose name was Saul, a choice and handsome young man. There was not a more handsome person than among the children of Israel. From his shoulders upward, he was taller than any of the people. So God's going, you want a king? I'll give you a king. This guy is a king. In man's eyes, at least. Now, let's go forward a little bit to verse 20. Verse 20, it says, but as for your donkeys that were lost 3 days ago, do not be anxious about them, for they have been found, and on whom all is the desire of Israel, is this not on you and all your father's house? speaking to Saul, and Saul answered and said, "Am I not a Benjamite of the smallest of the tribes of Israel, and my family the least of all the families of the tribes of Benjamin? Why then do you speak to me like this?" Because he was seeking Saul to be the king, and Saul was going, "Me?" Now, it seemed to be a pretty interesting attitude, didn't it? I mean, wow, me? The smallest of the families? We're nothing. Why do you choose me? And so it seemed to be a humble attitude. Now I'm looking at verse 17, but it must be a different chapter here. So let me just look for a second here. Okay, we can go forward here. What happened? Simple question here. What happened to Saul? When you understand the entirety of the story, what was the real downfall of Saul? What happened to him? It's really simple when you think about it. You can have some different, there probably are some different accurate answers, but wasn't it simply that he just didn't obey God? That's what it came down to, didn't it? He thought he could skirt around God's law. After all, he was the leader. I mean, he seemed to start with a very simple attitude. Something happens, though, as we know, when somebody gets into a position of leadership. They think that they can bypass laws that are even on their own books. Maybe laws that they came up with. Well, they don't apply to me. It certainly seems that that's done in our country today, doesn't it? I mean, I just heard this recently about health care, that it'll apply to everybody else, but not even to our own Congress. So they can heap that on other people, but not upon themselves. It's not an age-old issue, isn't it? Bypassing laws. In 1 Samuel chapter 15... 1 Samuel chapter 15, verse 22. 1 Samuel 15, verse 22. Samuel said, "Has the Lord as great delight in burnt offerings and sacrifices as in obeying the voice of the Lord? Behold, to obey is better than sacrifice, and to heed than the fat of rams, for rebellion is as the sin of witchcraft. And stubbornness is as iniquity and idolatry, because you have rejected the word of the Lord, he has also rejected you from being king." And look what he said in verse 24. "Saul said to Samuel, 'I have sinned, for I have transgressed the commandment of the Lord and your words, because I feared the people.'" Once you come to the point of fearing people, and not standing up for the right thing, Saul became fearful, not a man of courage. So he was not a fearless man, was he? He was a fearful man. So we can see again, just summing it up, what happened to the first king. Wasn't a good story, wasn't a good outcome. But God appointed a very tall person. Very handsome person. And even then, after they did that, there were certain rebels that were looking at him from the way that Saul pointed out. This is just a man, we don't know this man from the tribe of Benjamin. And they went about to try to usurp the throne. There were problems in Israel even to that point. So really, God saw it that even when he put a king in, it wasn't going to work out too well. He knew that. But he gave it to him. And so a second king was appointed. I think we all know who that was. Let's go to 1 Samuel chapter 16. 1 Samuel chapter 16. And we'll look at verse 6. So when it was they came, this is almost like a humorous type story that we see from a very prophet of God that just had to reject Saul, and he was actually mourning Saul, that God says, "Now I want you to go over here," and God doesn't tell him who it is. And I think there was a point here to be learned from what Samuel went through. Samuel was a prophet. You would have thought that he would have gone to the sons of Jesse and said, I know who it is. God didn't let him know who it was right away. I believe this was for our benefit today. So he looks at Eliab and says, this is him. Surely the Lord's anointed is before him. The Lord said to Samuel, do not look at his appearance or at the height of his stature, because I have refused him. For the Lord does not see as a man sees. For man looks at the outward appearance, but the Lord looks on the heart. And so Jesse called all of his sons. And in verse 10 it says, he made seven of his sons to pass before Samuel. And Samuel said to Jesse, the Lord has not chosen these. Could you imagine? I'd love to see this on video in the future. You know, there he's going through and he's probably perplexed. You know, why don't you just tell me? Well, that's got to be him. No, that's not him. Well, that's got to be him. No, that's not him. Well, that's got to be him. No, that's not him. And so he goes through all the sons. And he says, are all these, all the young men here? And he said, there remains yet the youngest. And there he is, keeping the sheep. Just a simple shepherd. That's it. Not really much importance, huh? In shepherding. Send him and bring him down, for we'll not sit down till he comes. And he sent and brought him down. Now, it says David was ruddy with bright eyes and he was good looking. So he wasn't an ugly man. But there was something about him. This maybe short, stocky, redhead type person. It'd be interesting to see what he looked like. But he was not a bad looking guy. So God says, this is the man. So when we see the difference between a good and a bad king, we're going to see something in the story of David here. If we go to Acts, let's go over to Acts chapter 13, because something was mentioned here to kind of put an exclamation point on what we just read. God had been observing David, obviously in communication all the time with David, and he knew his heart. Acts 13, verse 22, it says here, when he removed Saul, he raised up for them David as king, to whom he also gave testimony and said, I found David, the son of Jesse, a man after my own heart, who will do all my will. As I pointed out in my previous sermon, how did he know that? Because David was laying his life down for sheep. If you're going to lay your life down for an animal, certainly you would do it for a person. David was a shepherd. And not just any shepherd. Back to 1 Samuel chapter 17. 1 Samuel chapter 17. Sorry to make you go back there. Good practice in looking at chapters. In 1 Samuel chapter 17. Here in verse 33. Saul said to David, this is when the fight with Goliath came. And Saul said, you're not able to go against this Philistine to fight with him, for you are but a youth. And he a man of war from his soul. And so David was saying, let me tell you of what I've done. Your servant used to keep his father's sheep. And when a lion or a bear came and took a lamb out of the flock, I went out after it and struck it and delivered the lamb from its mouth. And when it arose to me, I caught it by its beard and struck it and killed it. That's really hard to imagine. When I've seen lions, to grab a lion by its beard and to kill it. He said, your servant has killed both lion and bear. And look at the courage in David. And this man, this uncircumcised Philistine, will be like one of them. David goes into it with pure confidence and courage, not cockiness, by the way. Why? Because he already established a relationship with his father. God sent him lions and bears. Now, who would you rather pick a fight with? Let's think about this for a second. If that's what your choices were, a lion, a bear, Goliath. I've seen lions fight. I've seen bears fight. And it's almost like they're insane when they get into a fight. Powerful. Claws. You know, sure, he had a spear and a sword. Lions have lots of them. And they're powerful. And when Goliath's done with you, he's not going to eat you, in all probability. So I would think if I was going to make those choices, Goliath would be my first pick. So now have at it. David's already done the lion and the bear. He looks at Goliath and he goes, really? With God's backing, I'm going to be fearful of this person? So we see an interesting attitude, but hey, this is the shepherd. This is the low guy. This is the servant. And God said, yeah. You know, can you remember another good shepherd before David? We don't maybe think of him as a shepherd, but God put him through a training process. Moses. You know, it's so interesting how God trains, by the way, as he's doing with us today. When he calls, he's working with us and developing leadership for something important that's going to be happening in the future. He gives us a vision. So he used Moses for 40 years under Pharaoh, for 40 years as a sheep herder in Midian, and for 40 years as a shepherd over Israel. You can see kind of the perfect training ground here. Now, there was no Forbes training. I doubt if Egypt had a top 10. No Harvard School of Business. Although, I imagine that Moses learned certain things under Pharaoh as far as administering. But no basic colleges or anything like that. And then he herded sheep in Midian. And then 40 years as a shepherd in Israel. So we see these training grounds, and sometimes we wonder what we're going through, and God knows exactly what we're going through. I've pointed out before that corporately, it seems like we've had to start over quite a few times. I thought of that as I saw the Fine Arts Building in Pasadena being torn down, kind of put a little knot in my stomach. Because that's some of our heritage there. Although, you know, we've got the perspective on that to know what's really important before God. So we see some of the training that we've received. And God's got a purpose for us. So we see what happened with these two kings. David died. And there was a third king of Israel. His name was King Solomon. What was different about this king? We see Saul, we see David, we see the leadership of old. We come to this king. Now, if I could ask you this question, which I asked the young campers this year, it's almost like if you've seen Art Linkletter. Remember that? Kids say the darnest things, and then Bill Cosby followed it up later on. It was so funny to watch some of the kids' responses. I've got some very interesting ones here, but let me ask you this question. If I had the power and authority to give you anything in the universe, anything, just think about that for a minute. If I had the power to give you anything, what would you ask for? I asked, and I started with the older ones. And this is kind of unfair in a way because they didn't know the topic I was talking about. So one of the answers, probably the first one, was an iPod. I said, well, that was, you know, kind of simple, wasn't it? Because she didn't ask for $1 million. She could have bought the whole company. Just something very simple, just an iPod. One thought for quite a long time. Really thinking about it, and later on found out that it was a candy factory. You know, she probably had watched Willy Wonka or something like that, and it looked like a lot of fun. Maybe she would put natural ingredients into it, who knows? But a candy factory. Then I got to the young ones. This was kind of tough because I asked the real young ones, what would I give you? The first response I got was God's heart. That one choked me. And I thought about that and I said, isn't that what God was teaching when he talked about those little children? Because sometimes when I thought about little children, I thought about some real brats. But when I saw this attitude, I saw this is one that God is looking for. Can you imagine that? No prompting, just God's heart. And it went along there when it asked for wisdom. Where did those answers come from? Over in 1 Kings chapter 3. Do you know, I wonder, as God asked this to Solomon, as we know this story, if God almost cried too. How often would God get something like this? I mean, we see his response. Let's read through this in verse 5 of 1 Kings 3. At Gibeon, the Lord appeared to Solomon in a dream by night and said, ask, what shall I give you? And Solomon said, you have shown great mercy to your servant David, my father, because he walked before you in truth and righteousness and in uprightness of heart with you. You have continued this great kindness for him, and you have given him a son to sit on his throne as it is this day. No, Lord my God, you have made your servant king instead of my father David, but I am like a little child. I don't know how to go out or to come in. And your servant is in the midst of your people by whom you have chosen, a great people, too numerous to even be numbered or counted. Therefore give your servant an understanding heart to judge your people, that I may discern between good and evil. For who is able to judge this great people of yours? I wonder what God thought at that time. I mean, again, we see his response, but I mean, did you get someone with about a tear in his eye going, I just, this is unheard of among men to ask for this. But it says it pleased the Lord that Solomon had asked this thing. And God said, because you have asked this thing, have not asked long life for yourself, nor have asked riches for yourself, nor have asked the life of your enemies, but have asked for yourself understanding to discern justice, I have done according to your words. I have given you a wise and understanding heart, so that there has not been anyone like you before you, nor will any like you arise after you. And I have given you also what you have not asked, both riches and honor, so that there will not be anyone like you among the kings all your days. So, if you will walk in my ways to keep my statutes and my commandments, as your father David walked, then I will lengthen your days. There was a promise given as long as he was maintaining and following instruction that God would continue to bless them. Now, we really don't know totally what happened. We don't know if Solomon was able to recover. It's not really provable in there exactly what happened. Did he come out of this? Did he recover? Because God gave him instruction, didn't he? He gave him warning. It is possible that he endured. But can you imagine God coming to you in a dream by night? You know, all of us have certain needs and things that we might like. But do we look at it in this way and almost in such a converted way? Different way to look like, you know, I really need this and I need this, but how about the most important? What's lacking in the world today among leaders? Well, obviously God's Spirit, but it's hard to find wisdom, understanding. Now, Solomon was king, and he did what a king would do. In fact, as I've mentioned, I think in the future, those that were resurrected among Israel are going to be very angry at Solomon. He took all the choices to the women. He probably got some of those young Israelites very, very angry. Because one wasn't good enough, two wasn't good enough, 100 wasn't good enough, 200. And Solomon, God said, the king is going to do this. But yet we do see a king among Israel that had such wisdom and understanding that people would come and flock to him. It seemed to go to his head. And God warned him of that. If you take these other women, they're going to change your ways. And they did. So the warning was there. And the warning, by the way, is to us all. Let's go over to Deuteronomy chapter 8. This happens in a world that sometimes we get a little bit of a shock when we see a In Accord video like we did today that shows a woman that hand bikes 3 miles. I have no idea how long it would take her to get there on a dirt road with potholes in that little bike, and to see such dedication. And compared to her, we're billionaires. And yet, although we think about that, that can start to affect our attitude like it did the previous kings, and God does not want to see that happen. In Deuteronomy chapter 8, beginning in verse 10, he said, "When you have eaten and are full, then you will bless the Lord your God for the good which he has given to you. Beware that you do not forget the Lord your God by not keeping his commandments, his judgments, and his statutes which I command you this day. Lest when you have eaten and are full and have built beautiful houses and dwell in them, and when your herds and your flocks multiply," and I see have built beautiful houses. Well, the houses that are today are just incredible, what we get to live in. And growing up in a medium class family, back in the 60s, we had 3 bedrooms. I shared a room with my brother, and I thought we had a nice house. And the whole family shared 1 bathroom. And then we finished the basement and got another bathroom. And that was like, whoa, that was the guys. And now today, you know, you've got the master bath and the guest bath. And all kinds of, these are the houses that are built now. And it's become a society that wants to take, doesn't it? So it says, when your herds and your flocks multiply and your silver and your gold are multiplied and all that you have is multiplied, when your hurt is lifted up and you forget the Lord your God who brought you out of the land of Egypt from the house of bondage, and we can put it in our day, who brought us out of the darkness to see something special. And if we don't recapture that vision of what God is doing with us and our purpose. Because sometimes we look at ourselves as, well, we're not all that important. And certainly we can take on that attitude. What we've asked the question, I have, why me? I wasn't well known or well regarded at all. Just didn't seem to be that important. And all of us could probably say that. And we come into a spot where God's given us so much. And we can start to forget what we are, what we're supposed to become. Because how could you see yourself as a king? Can you see yourself as a leader? We have to. Because that's what we're destined to become. And if we see ourselves that way, then we're going to respond in the way that we live our life accordingly. So didn't this happen, by the way, to great King Nebuchadnezzar, another king of old? And he was warned, wasn't he? Was it not many months later, 12 months? He was walking, looked out, and said, "Is this not Babylon that I have built for the might of my majesty and my glory?" And he was eating grass for 7 years. Until he figured it out. It's just in the nature of mankind that when somebody gets into a position of leadership or authority, it gets abused. I read from the beginning on such abuses that it destroyed, you would think, a king that reigns over so many people, it's like you would want more people to reign over, not less. So let's kill 20 to 40 million. At least I'll get the ones that are loyal. Yeah, loyal, they're fearful of you because it's not a true servant. So the warning is to us all. It happened to Nebuchadnezzar. It certainly happened to Satan from the very beginning, and it was warned, be careful. And his heart got lifted up too. God gave early testimony and instruction to those who would lead. And he knew what was going to happen, by the way, with the Israelites way before it happened. Let's go back to Deuteronomy chapter 17. And this is the importance of why we study our Bibles, of why we come back each Sabbath to be refreshed, of why we go to the Feast of Tabernacles, by the way, and hear practically some of the same messages over the past 20, 30, 40 years. We hear the same things for the holy days, many cases, and yet it's our failure sometimes to remember some of these things. So we're refreshed. God knew that the king would need this too. Otherwise, the king would be so busy in what he was doing. Which one of us is not busy today? Are we too busy for God? Once that happens, something can happen wrong in our lives. So we see in Deuteronomy chapter 17, and let's begin in verse 14. Deuteronomy 17, verse 14. When you come to the land which the Lord your God is giving you, and you possess it and dwell over it and say, I will set a king over me like all the nations that are around me. He knew. He knew this was going to happen. He said, you will surely set a king over you whom the Lord your God chooses, which happened. One from among your brethren you will set as king over you. You may not set a foreigner over you who is not your brother. But he shall not multiply horses for himself. What happened to Solomon? He was known for the horses. Nor cause the people to return to Egypt to multiply horses, for the Lord has said, you shall not return that way again. And yet he married foreign wives that led people into other pagan practices. Neither shall he multiply wives for himself. There was instruction given here. Lest his heart turn away, nor shall he greatly multiply silver and gold for himself, and it all shall be when he sits on the throne of his kingdom, that he shall write for himself a copy of this law in a book, the one before the priests, the Levites, and it will be with him, and he will read it all the days of his life, that he may learn to fear the Lord his God, and be careful to observe all the words of the law of these statutes, that his heart may not be lifted above his brethren, that he may not turn aside from the commandment to the right or to the left, and that he may prolong his days in his kingdom, he and his children in the sight of Israel. And you saw that Solomon dropped the ball, didn't he? If only did he write this? Wouldn't it be interesting to go through and see if he would have just written this and read it? We don't know if he did it. Now, he certainly was a wise person who, in the days of his wisdom, wrote some pretty good books for us to read who God had them placed in here. But he didn't continue. And a lot of people have not continued. And there's still that threat. And we're surrounded by bad leadership. That's what we see on a daily basis. I think as God's people, though, we see it in, hopefully in a different way. That I wouldn't do that, I wouldn't do that. See, we're getting ready. I kind of saw that growing up, being the younger one. I had an older brother and older sister. See, when you're the younger one, you get to watch some of the mistakes. Hopefully not make the same ones yourself as you watch. We're learning today as God's first fruits and watching the way that the world operates, and we're seeing the way not to do it. And yeah, you hear everybody on the radio complaining, but it really hasn't fixed anything, has it? Because we just continue to have bad leadership. And it seems to be getting worse all the time. So he gave a testimony. This might be a good time for us, even during the feast, to write a copy of the book of the law. A nice goal for some Bible study, to write and read some of these things. We have the testimonies of the kings revealed in the book of Kings and Chronicles. what made a good king and what made a bad king? We've got all kinds of historical examples back in their time as well as our time today. What made a good king versus a bad king? And what was the outcome? You remember good ones. There were very few as you look through there. Usually there were bad kings. Along would come a good king, like Josiah. You know, wouldn't it have been great to be a Josiah? You're kind of just kicking everybody out, all the bad guys, wiping out the places of pagan worship, and just go, we're starting this all over. As I've mentioned, we've had the opportunity to start over too, haven't we? We've wondered about that. Oh, here we go again. We got to start all over, leave everything behind and start over. Christ returns. You're pretty good at starting over. We got to wipe the slate clean, don't we? How are we going to do this with all the so-called pagan temples of our time that you can see out throughout our land? How is this going to be when we have a vision, maybe a millennial vision, that I tried to communicate with the kids a few years back, and one said that the temple or the maybe a physical element would be at the center of the city, and people on the Sabbath would gravitate. Maybe that's a way. Maybe that's the way a certain city would be set up. Maybe one will be outside the city. We don't know exactly how it will be set up, but we know we'll be teaching God's laws and God's ways. And they'll go, well, how do you know all this? We read the book, and you're going to have to too. So because by that time, we'll be full firstborn spirit beings in the God family. Our heart will be set toward God, never to be turned away again, and now we'll have the excitement of the fulfillment of teaching other people. This is our roles, and this is what God says. I don't know how many will be actual kings and priests. The nation of Israel was a kingdom of kings and priests, but not all of them were. But out of the first fruits, you can guarantee you will have some kind of leadership role. It's our destiny to be leaders in the future. But we're going to have to know and understand how to do it in the right way. Now let's go to Revelation 19 because we see something exciting. And I wonder what exactly this is going to look like and its fulfillment. You know, we tend to be a people of pomp and circumstance, ceremony. There's nothing wrong with that. That's great. But God is one too. And when Christ returns, he's going to return looking pretty good. Majestic. It would be hard to even sometimes imagine because of how great it's going to be. Revelation 19, verse 11, it says, I saw heaven open. This is John experiencing this vision. And behold, a white horse, and he who sat on him was called Faithful and True, and in righteousness he judges and makes war. His eyes were like the flame of fire, and on his head were written many crowns. And he had a name written that no one knew except himself. He was clothed with a robe dipped in blood, and his name is called the Word of God. And the armies in heaven, clothed in fine linen, white and clean, followed him on white horses. And out of his mouth goes a sharp sword, and that with it he should strike the nations, and he himself will rule them with a rod of iron. He himself treads in the winepress of the fierceness and wrath of Almighty God, and he has on his robe and on his thigh a name written, King of Kings and Lord of Lords. King of Kings. Now, if we're going to rule with him, and as we read in Revelation 1 that we're destined to become kings, then just as there will be priests, and what's he also known as? The chief priest, the high priest. The chief apostle. He rules over all. This is the one that's going to come with the pomp and splendor. And the people of God with him, if we look over at Revelation 17, Revelation chapter 17, to get another piece of this vision here. Revelation 17, verse 12 says, The ten horns which you saw are ten kings who have received no kingdom as yet, but they receive authority for 1 hour as kings with the beast. These are of one mind, and they will give their power and authority to the beast. They will make war with the Lamb, and the Lamb will overcome them, for he is Lord of lords and King of kings, and those who are with him are called, chosen, and faithful. That sounds like us. Called, chosen. How do you become chosen? Many are called, but few are chosen. I think, don't we know the answer to that now? There used to be a little bit of a vague question. How do you become chosen? Because in order to continue, as did David, you had to continue to keep God's laws and God's ways, not just do it for a time and then fall away. You can't be chosen then. Few are chosen because not many continue to keep God's laws. Remember, we go all the way back to Deuteronomy. It says, beware lest you forget and stop doing that. It had to be a continuation. Not once saved, always saved, as much as the world teaches. There's got to be a continuation. So this is our King of Kings and Lord of Lords. This is the picture. And not knowing the grandeur and splendor, but wow, it sounds pretty majestic. Where he says he rules with a rod of iron, we also see all those other qualities of the Spirit that also include the gentleness. He's not gentle with people who defy him. There's going to be blood up to the saddles, as we've seen, up to the bridles, with people that will come against him. He doesn't tolerate sin. No doubt very sorry that he'd have to destroy people that don't want to delight in his ways, and who Satan is so influenced to become so corrupt and so evil that he's going to have to smite it. But he does it with power, and he does it fearlessly. And so will we who will rule with him. So can you and I lead? Can you and I be good kings? I would hope that if someone asks that question, that you'll no longer say, who, me? I can't lead. Can I ask you, why not? I'll ask you again, why couldn't you be a better leader than anyone else on the face of this earth right now? Yes, we're learning and growing. Should we not? Wouldn't you want a leader among any government today that would have the qualities exhibited in Galatians 5? That exhibits love, joy, and peace? Peace? That would pursue it earnestly? If this is the characteristics that we have with the begettal of God's Spirit, it'd make you a better leader than anyone in the world today. No, you don't have to be masters of engineering and economics, but you can certainly find and look for good quality people and ask, just like Solomon did, help me to find good, solid leaders whom I can trust and who will lead with righteousness and goodness. That'd be almost like unheard of now. But could you and I at least not say, yes, I could become a good leader. If God chose to place me there, then I see all the examples throughout the Bible, and I would like to be called a good king, wouldn't you? I don't see anybody out here today that I would consider an Ahab or a Jezebel. That'd be pretty dangerous within the London congregation. But how about on the other side? Someone who exhibits the traits of God. I think we would all make good leaders. And God is still teaching us and preparing us right now as we continue to study his word. Let's look at Psalm 37. The one thing that we constantly are reminded of is we can't do it. This is where Proverbs ends, this great scripture in Proverbs 29, where it says, happy is he who keeps the law. Why would it put that right next to that? Where there's no vision, the people perish, but happy is he who keeps the law. Because that's part of the vision. It has to be. Those that have lost that vision have done so because they refuse to keep God's law. How many kings have done that? So we go to Psalm 37 in verse 23. Here's all David's, so interesting, all of David's thoughts. David, a good shepherd, went after God's heart, whose thoughts are written down in here. The good times, the bad times, the hurtful times, his heart's poured out in the book of Psalms. And lessons that we can learn from today, Psalm 37 and verse 23. says, the steps of a good man are ordered by the Lord, and he delights in his way. Though he fall, he'll not be utterly cast down, for the Lord upholds him with his hand. If we're a God-fearing people, we've had our downs too. And God says, I'll keep you up. I'm not going to leave you helpless. See, a good king always had his hard times too. You remember Hezekiah? What a horrible time that this king went through when he was threatened and he didn't have to lift a finger against the king of Assyria. The hard times David went through, and God held him up and lifted him up also. Psalm 32, let's go back a couple chapters here to chapter 32, and let's look at verse 8. Psalm 32, verse 8, I will instruct you and teach you in the way you will go. I will guide you with my eye. This is opposite of what we saw in Jeremiah. The way of the man is not in himself. When we see bad leadership today, that's exactly what we're seeing. We're seeing the fulfillment and the outcome of the way of man not being in himself. It's not possible. And you know, it's a miracle that we're surviving today. Our country is a miracle that's surviving today. It was a miracle to get through the wars that we've gone through and even survive. When you see God's hand in World War II and some of the other things. So it's certainly not by our righteousness that we've been upheld and been established, but God, as we see, constantly removing that protection and his reward. But we do see a very good outcome, and we're learning the lessons of good leadership now. Proverbs chapter 16, we'll go to a couple of Proverbs here. Proverbs chapter 16, oh, that Solomon would have heeded his own words. I really hope that he made it. Chapter 16, verse 9. Here it says, a man's heart plans his ways, but the Lord directs his steps. That sounds like we've got to be in constant communication before God to understand what his will is, not my will. And so, of course, we go back to Proverbs chapter 3. Again, one of my favorites right here. Proverbs chapter 3, most of you know this. Trust in the Lord with all your heart, and do not lean to your own understanding, because it'll always get us into trouble. From the time that we were very, very young, as kids, we start to experiment with our own understanding. When our parents will say, don't touch that. And there it is. We end up touching it. Don't do that. We do it. Then you come up to an adult. Don't swear. Well, I swear. Just refusing to listen to what God says. In all your ways, acknowledge him, and he'll direct your path. Once again, showing what a good leader has to do. We cannot lead and be good leaders by ourselves. The history of mankind has shown that. And once again, if we look at it as a whole, how many good leaders in the entirety of the world from the beginning would you see from all who have led? A tiny, tiny few. That we can even go back to and say, this was a pretty decent leader. Most of it's been bad. Most of it in Israel was bad. Very few, except those who have been chosen to live by the word of God. Or at least even have a partial understanding of it. To know that somehow, where our founding fathers would acknowledge a God. And then reap the blessings of what they saw to the best of their ability in the book. Finishing here, let's go to Isaiah chapter 58. I have to say we've gone through some different scriptures that have been my favorites. Now I've got a favorite chapter here in Isaiah 58. Here's what a good leader does. Now, what do we see in our world today? You come up to elections. Okay, so we're thinking for a second about elections while I read this verse. If you take away the yoke from the midst of the pointing of the finger and speaking wickedness. Isn't that what the elections are about? How few leaders run on their own capability and their own leadership rather than putting down the other guy. It's always the people really have come to the point where they're kind of tired of that, even in the world today. Here it comes. Somebody's going to be pointing the finger and running negative campaign ads, as they say. That's not how a good leader runs. A good leader will run on righteousness. And this is what I'm going to do. This is what I'm going to follow. If you extend your soul to the hungry and satisfy the afflicted soul, this is the opposite right here of what we saw from what they said. He will take this. He will take that. They'll take that. Here it says, you're giving. If you extend your soul to the hungry and satisfy the afflicted soul, then your light will dawn in the darkness and your darkness will be as the noonday. The Lord will guide you continually and satisfy your soul in the drought and strengthen your bones, and you will be like a watered garden and the spring of water whose waters do not fail. Those from among you will build the old waste places. Won't that? That's a picture of the future. You will raise up the foundations of many generations, and you'll be called the repair of the breach. I love that title. A repair of the breach. Who among God's people don't desire to fix wrongs, to heal hurts and to heal wounds, to see people smile, to see people come out of pain, and to be happy and to rejoice. The restorer of the streets to dwell in, that's going to be a part of our responsibility in the future. So, brethren, I'll say, let us make sure and be certain to follow the instructions of a king, because it is our destiny.